This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Maintaining bone strength is complex with no single solution. My patients who want to optimize their bone health have seen remarkable results with LiveMD as part of a comprehensive bone program. LiveMD is a Class 1 medical device cleared by the FDA. It creates a gentle, low-intensity vibration to benefit your musculoskeletal system. It's a safe, scientifically proven, and simple approach to maintaining musculoskeletal health and wellness. It really works, just 10 minutes per day. Go to livemd.us, that's livemd.us, to learn more about how LiveMD may improve your health. That's livemd.us. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today I'm going to talk about a subject that I've been promising to talk about for a long time. I've been doing a lot of research on this experientially, myself trying out some of these things, as well as reading up on the subject. The subject is wearables and trackers. Wearables and trackers are all the rage. They are devices that we can put on our wrists or alternatively in our pockets or even hook onto our clothing, or sometimes they're even built into the clothing. They're little chips that we can put onto our shoes, or they're embedded in the shoes. Nike has some of these things. And these purport to give us useful feedback about our health and our athletic performance. And it is claimed that we are in the midst of a wearable and tracker revolution. And I have to say that I have mixed feelings about this. I mean, partially it's generational. I didn't grow up with all this technology. I started running in the days where you just strapped on a pair of sneakers and maybe had a little 1999 plastic watch so you could look at your time. And if you wanted to figure out how far you went, you would look at a map and you'd roughly calculate how far you went. Or actually, one of the things that I used to do is if I wanted to know how far I went, sometimes I would do a run and then I would jump in the car. Maybe I was on the way to the market and I would actually drive the distance of my run, the same exact course. And then I would have a calculation of how far I ran. And, of course, a little bit wasteful of time and gasoline. But, hey, you know, it's there's a workaround for everything. Nowadays, you have a wealth of opportunities to tell you whether you are reaching optimal heart rate, whether you have expended the optimal number of calories, even whether you're getting up and sitting down enough. And more on that subject later. There are even sleep trackers. They tell you whether you're getting optimal or adequate sleep. And so, you know, let me comment generally on this, and then we'll review some of the products for you, because this, to some extent, is a consumer review, although this is it's a rapidly changing field. It's a little bit like reviewing the latest desktop computer or the latest phones or the latest tablets. Things keep changing rapidly, and there's just lots and lots of competition. And there's so many options that it's really bewildering. So I decided to explore some of this stuff. But, you know, some general comments about this. There's actually been some criticism of the whole movement towards tracking. Tracking, you know, sometimes the results lead you to believe that you've accomplished something, and this creates what has been termed moral licensing. So, for example, you know, you get on the treadmill and you work out, and they say, congratulations, you've burned 320 calories, and the equivalent of 320 calories is maybe a Snickers bar. And so you think, hey, great, you know, let me have that Snickers bar because I've just paid it forward. There's actually been some discussion of how sometimes tracking and the feedback that we get is not all benign. I mean, certainly you got to say that tracking has been helpful for some people who otherwise would be sedentary. I know that some of my friends who've led fairly sedentary lifestyles have now bought little Jawbones or Fitbits, little trackers that they put on their wrist, and it tells them how many steps they've taken. And they endeavor to take a certain number of steps every day. And it's nice at the end of the day to get the feedback like, okay, great, you know, you met your fitness goal. And it is a simple form of motivation and reward. This is actually something that could be particularly helpful for the elderly, because the elderly, you know, have a tendency to sit around. So I actually have a family member who is 96, about to be 97, and we gave her a Fitbit to, you know, just to see. You know, she walks around inside the house. Sometimes she goes out, and we want her to maintain her mobility. So, you know, it actually provides you with some feedback. Hey, did you accomplish your goals? And that's a good thing. Actually, unbeknownst to a lot of people, the phone you carry is a pretty good way of determining how many steps you take, how many miles you've traversed, and because it registers that whether you want to or not, as long as you have the settings on your phone. In modern phones, both Android and iPhones, they do give you that feedback. There's a little, many users of iPhones aren't even aware of its capability. The iPhone is sort of like the human brain. We only utilize about probably 5% of our capabilities in the human brain, and a lot of people ignore some of the possibilities with their iPhone. But there's a little app in the iPhone, which I have, and it's got a little heart on it, and it's a health app. And the health app actually, you know, can give you some feedback about what's going on. You have to voluntarily enter the information if you want to enter, you know, monitor your height, your weight, your blood pressure. And there are different devices that can link automatically with the help app. You know, the folks at Apple have thought this is going to be the beginning of a revolution in self-care. But it's taken some peripatetic steps because, you know, some people are early enthusiastic adopters and other people aren't just, you know, are not getting with the program to aggregate massive amounts of personal information about their health that they can look at. I mean, the idea is laudable, is that we take charge of our health and we can see it in all its splendor or all its deficits displayed in graphs and data. There's actually a place in the iPhone which tells you how many steps you've taken every day and on average how many you've taken during a month. And it's actually pretty cool. It does that alone, and a lot of people don't even check it out. So look for that data on your iPhone or Android device. It's probably also a corresponding app on your Android phone that's built into the phone, because phones now have accelerometers. The key to this technology is the development of tiny accelerometers, which are carefully calibrated with algorithms to determine what constitutes a step. And the step is then translated into a distance. And I'm not quite sure how they do this. Maybe some gearhead or some rocket scientist can explain this to me. But it's actually fairly accurate. Maybe there's some invocation of GPS tracking to see how far you go, because there's always a locator on your phone unless you opt not to have a locator. Maybe you're in the witness protection program, or you're a undercover agent or some sort of societal fugitive, and you turn off your locator. But most people keep their locators on. So the phone tracks where you go and how far you go. And tells you also if you've climbed stairs. It seems to be able to distinguish whether you've climbed stairs or whether you've walked on a normal surface. The one drawback of this is that if you exercise, you have to wear your phone. And phones are big and cumbersome. I sometimes see people running, and they have those big phablets. You know, those phones that are sort of a cross between a phone and a tablet, and they're strapped to their arms, and they look huge and cumbersome. I personally opted for the smaller version of the iPhone, which fits into a plastic sleeve which straps to my arm, and it's a little bit cumbersome, but when you run with that, then it enables you to include your running activity or say you're on the stair climber in the gym or doing something that you want to have register on your activity log, you have to have the phone with you. It's not, it's fine when you're walking to work because you have your phone in your briefcase or your pocket, but in the gym, you got to strap it on. And we'll get to some workarounds for that, because that for some people is a deal breaker, because they don't want to exercise with their phone on. I get it. But some people, they're so dedicated to logging their activities that they keep their phone in some kind of plastic sleeve on their arm to show what they're doing. So, there's nothing more frustrating than consulting your iPhone. And I do this from time to time because there's an activity tracker. And I got to say, it's far from ideal, because if you enter an activity and you carry your iPhone, it will register the activity, and then you'll see whether you've met your goal or exceed your goal. You can set your own goals, but for some reason, it sets your calorie goals based on your age, your fitness level, your height and weight, your sex. And I got to say, I'm extremely active. Even on days where I carry my iPhone, I rarely meet my calorie output goal. So something is a little wrong with their, the way that they set that up. The calories burned thing is kind of weird. And, with a car, you can pretty much determine with a mechanical object like a car or a bicycle, precisely how many calories are required to move that object of a certain weight. It's Newtonian physics, a certain distance. But human physiology is very variable. And some people, like two people of exactly the same age, sex, height, and weight might burn different amounts of calories with the very same amount of exertion. Okay, so the assumptions that underlie the iPhone can be deceptive, can actually be misleading. And for me, kind of frustrating and useless, because when it tells me I've been knocking myself out, I ran, four miles, and I walked to work an additional couple of miles. And at the end of the day, it says, well, you've met 500, you've expended 550 calories and your goal is 860 calories. That's kind of absurd, because the net result is, I'm not gaining weight. This. I mean, if I were so deficient in meeting my caloric goals day in and day out, I'd be a tub with all those unmet caloric goals. So this is part of the problem. The other thing is that, you can pair the iPhone with an Apple Watch. There are also Android versions of the Apple Watch. And the Apple Watch is cool. But it is, I got to say, an incomplete activity tracker. And I'll tell you what some of its advantages and disadvantages are. On the one hand, the Apple Watch enables you to do some good things. It enables you to, while you run, if you run with your iPhone. That's the key. The Apple Watch on its own can read your heart rate, but it doesn't record where you've gone with the GPS. It doesn't have a built-in GPS. The phone has a built-in GPS, and the phone is where the apps reside that give you more information about how far you've gone, and you can map your run with various types of applications like Runtastic and Map My Run, or you can map your bicycle ride, and you can then share it on social media. So you can brag. You can say, look, wow, here's the map of, like, I was all over the countryside. I did, a 30-mile bike ride. That's pretty cool. And you can post it to Facebook. You can tweet it. You can, rock your athletic accomplishments. But in order to do that with the Apple Watch, you have to pair it with your phone. Okay, so that means, great, well, you got the Apple Watch, that's okay. So you think, well, it's all there, right? No, it's not. It's, you actually have to carry your phone. So you can put the phone in your pocket while running. Well, that's not so great. It bounces around. So a lot of people strap the phone to their arm. And you don't need to physically connect with a wire your Apple Watch to the iPhone because there's a Bluetooth connectivity that works pretty well. The watch communicates with your phone. And one of the cool things you can do with the Apple Watch is you can listen to music and control. You can use the Apple Watch as a controller for the music on your phone, which is a little easier than, I mean, sometimes, you know, I go running and unfortunately on my playlist, I sometimes mix my songs. So I'm listening to this great rock song, the song's over, and then I get, welcome to Intelligent Medicine. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And it's like, okay, that's not, unfortunately, I forgot to erase a recording of my podcast on my playlist. And then I have to stop and I have to pull out my iPhone and I have to, with my sweaty fingers, touch the touch screen and advance it to the next song. Well, with the Apple Watch, you can do that on your wrist. You can actually use the Apple Watch as a controller for the music on your phone, which is cool. And if you want, you can use headphones that are Bluetooth as well, or you can use headphones that are wire headphones. I prefer the wire ones because I'm not sure what the radiation implications are, all those Bluetooth connections to the headphones that may send radio frequency into my brain. I think I'm getting enough radio frequency as it is. So the problem with the iWatch as an activity tracker is that, first of all, there's an advantage because a lot of one of the most important pieces of feedback that you can get when you're working out and training is whether you're achieving optimal or maximal heart rate. For some people, the consideration is, you know, perhaps they're in cardiac rehab and they don't want to go too high in their heart rate. They're told to limit their heart rate to below a certain level. For me, fortunately, and for many athletes, the issue is, are you working out maximally? In other words, is your workout meaningful? Because, for example, when you're in a spin class, you can sort of dog it and, you know, maybe your pulse rate is going to 105 and that's okay, but it's not really a very, very challenging aerobic workout. So you want the feedback that you're actually getting somewhere in terms of getting into your aerobic heart rate zone. So getting having a device on your wrist or perhaps mounted on your handlebars on your bike, giving you your pulse is a good thing. And it's an incentivizer, too, because it's sort of like, okay, your pulse rate is slower. You speed up, cycle harder, run faster. It also, in some ways, is reassuring because, you know, it tells you that, okay, you know, I'm having a regular workout. This is usually my heart rate. I don't want to go much higher than this. Although I'm out of breath, I feel like a gutted fish, my heart rate is still pretty reasonable. And so that's, you know, one of the reasons that heart rate monitors are useful. But heart rate monitors traditionally have been like the polar meter. I think they were pioneers in that technology. It's basically a band that you put around your chest, and there's a little transmitter that you put right at your breastbone, and it pretty accurately picks up your heart rate and transmits it to a watch or transmits it to your phone. I actually find those a little bit of a nuisance. It's another piece you have to remember to bring. They are thought to be the most accurate way of determining your heart rate, but new technologies have now allowed us to measure heart rate from the wrist. Now, Apple Watch is one of the first devices that's widely available that measures your heart rate from your wrist, which is cool. But, and there's a big but, the Apple Watch measures your heart rate with actually a form of light sensing. And interestingly, you know, you think your pulse is actually somewhere on the thumb side of your hand, if you have your open palm towards you, on your wrist, the inner part of your wrist. Actually, where the watch resides is on the other side. It's on the you know, what is essentially the top of your arm, and the sensor is there, and it actually best reads your pulse a little higher up, not precisely where your wrist meets your hand, but maybe two finger breaths above your hand. So you have to have a tight, snug fit. Some people who have bought the Apple Watch with the fancier band, the metal band, complain that because that band is a little too loose, it looks great, but they don't get a good pulse reading. So I use the cheaper, I guess it's a plastic or plastic rubber sports band when I use my iWatch to register my heart rate. But there's another problem. The Apple Watch has so much going on in it, and the object is to make it relatively small and light and compact. So it doesn't have that much battery power, and as a result, the way it measures pulse is through an intermittent technology. In other words, it periodically checks your pulse. I don't know what the algorithm is, whether it's every 15 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, and it sort of averages them out and gives you a pulse rate that's based on intermittent monitoring. And this can be sort of a nuisance sometimes, you know, while you're running, because you're waiting for it to register. You know that your heart rate is up, but the Apple Watch hasn't caught up with it yet. It's pretty accurate once you're at a steady high heart rate, but sometimes in working up to a high heart rate, you don't really see that display accurately. So this can be a drawback with the Apple Watch. The other thing about the Apple, and they, just to comment on the accuracy of this, wrist determination of pulse is said to be less accurate than the chest band, but the chest band, but the wrist determination with the Apple Watch, if done correctly, is pretty accurate within about 5% of your actual pulse rate. Some of the other devices don't work as well. But there's an alternative to the Apple Watch. So, you know, so I started using the Apple Watch, and I wasn't that happy with the pulse monitoring. And the other problem with the Apple Watch is that you can't take it in the water. And it's kind of cool to check your pulse while you're swimming. And I do a lot of swimming. And you absolutely can't submerge the Apple Watch. That's a no-go. So there are alternatives to the wristband technology of the Apple Watch that are, A, not intermittent, but continuous, and B, they don't require that you remain on land. You can actually get wet. You can check your pulse underwater. And the one that I am now exploring is something called the Mio. The Mio actually has, if you look at it while it's measuring your pulse and you look under the watch, under the inside the watch, it actually flashes kind of a cool blue light. And the idea is that it's measuring your circulation just below the surface of your skin with light waves. Not exactly sure how that works, but it's the flow of blood beneath the surface. And I find it pretty accurate, and it's great for spin classes, and it's great for swimming. I can take it in the water, and it's great for running. But when it comes to, GPS, which you have the capability of with the Apple Watch, only if you pair it with the the phone, it's just kind of like a one-note Charlie. The Mio device basically is a pulse meter and or watch. I mean, it's got some interactivity via Bluetooth so that it can be used to receive text and things like that. But I never bothered to go there because it seems kind of cumbersome to hook that up. But, you know, as a standalone device to measure your pulse, it has a nice display. There's also another one that does this, and that is the Basis Watch. The Basis Watch will also check your pulse, and you can take it into the water. And it's a wrist-based technology that is continuous. Again, the point I'm trying to make, and I'm going to continue this podcast in just a moment with some comparisons, is that at this stage in the technology, it's complicated, and every device has its advantages and disadvantages, and you sacrifice something to get something else. And sometimes you have so many features in a thing that you get this big honking device that's very expensive, the features of which you probably won't even bother to use unless you're a professional triathlete or an extremely wonky rocket scientist kind of person who wants to check every metric of your life on the watch. So we're going to divide this podcast into two parts. So let's pause. And when we return, we'll take a look at some of the options when it comes to trackers. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.